our featured presentation, Carolyn Peterson, who has happily newly joined our staff, but has recent public library experience, so it's not like some of us who haven't been out in the trenches for very too recently, is going to talk to us about reading, which is a subject that we were asked to talk about, actually. And I think most of you received a packet from us. If any of you didn't, email me later, and I will be sure you get one. But, hello, Carolyn.
Hello. Before I begin, a word about the text we sent you. I want you to remember that it was printed in 1995 and is due to be updated shortly. And other than the pages that earnestly exhort you of, don't be afraid of the computer to read, I found the text to be right on target and very, very useful. So I heartily recommend that you spend the half an hour to hour that it will take to read it if you haven't already done so. It's really a great primer for reading. So what I intend to do today is cover the following points. And I guess now would also be a time to remind people who weren't here when I first said it that I really would like you to interject and make this a conversation about reading. I may say some things that you find, she's saying that? And I really would like you to go to tell me that, you know, and then let's discuss. I'll tell you the reasoning behind it, and we can have a conversation about this, and I think that will be beneficial to all of us. So what I'm going to do today is cover 4 points. I'm going to attempt to motivate you to read. All of you have experience, and you know that reading is necessary. So I'm going to remind you why reading is worth the effort. Second, I'm going to discuss what work you need to have accomplished before you start pulling materials off the shelf. Third, I'm going to quickly review the CREW method of reading. And then fourth, I'm going to suggest some techniques that make reading less of a burden. When you're the only person in a branch or a library, there are always so many more tasks that seem important. Of course, when the page comes to you and says, how do you expect me to show up when there's no room? It's amazing how quickly reading moves up the splinter chain of tasks. Why should you read? Well, in a nutshell, if you don't read effectively, your library will soon begin a slow spiral into irrelevancy. Your competition should goad you to action. Well, who's your competition? Your competition for a bigger budget with your funders is Amazon, Borders, and Barnes & Noble. Not traditionally of whom we thought of as our, you know, I always used to think of the library down the street. I had to measure up to the library down the street. But nowadays, I have to measure up to Barnes & Noble or Amazon. Because when a customer walks through the double doors at Amazon or Borders, they see everything being new and shiny and attractive and displayed in an enticing manner. We have to measure up. Now, I can hear most of you mentally shrieking, I am not a bookstore, and my library has survived for over 100 years without meeting that standard. Well, I hate to say it, but you know, our customers and patrons have so many more options than they used to 10 years ago. I would venture to say that most of you have a Costco or a Walmart within driving distance of your library. And you know, they weren't there 10 years ago, and now they can go to get bestsellers for cheap. Amazon wasn't available, or people didn't know how to access it, and you know, you get on Amazon, it looks great. DVDs now are everywhere. You can't go to the smallest checkout store without seeing DVDs as a pickup item. So the internet and big box stores are serious competition to us. The second fact that should spur you to reading is the general climate of the times. Information is changing rapidly, and all of our customers know it. Now more than any time in the past, if your nonfiction materials aren't current, your customers aren't going to be coming back. The internet has brought a world of disorganized information to everyone who has a computer connection. 10 years ago, if school kids needed material for a state report, the school library and the public library were really about the only resources in town, other than if your parents owned an encyclopedia set. Now, many of our students don't even bother to walk through our doors. They go directly to the internet and can find most of what they need fairly easily. You have to provide a reason for customers to walk through your door. Now, one of the strengths your library has is that your material is organized. You can find stuff, and you know that's not always the case on the internet. However, when our customers find that stuff, they need to perceive it as worthwhile. I have had the humbling experience of finding a book. Somebody asked me for a travel book on Chile, and I went to the shelf, and I pulled it off, and the customer looked at it. It was, had a copyright date of 3 years. It was 3 years old, and they said, that's too old, and walked away. So, weeding is essential to maintain a collection. You have to do it. Okay. Any questions or comments on this? Okay. I'll keep going. Your next step, hopefully you're motivated. You've got to do it. It's essential. So now your next step is to review your material selection policy. Does everybody have one of those?
Yes, they're not recently updated.
Okay, well if you don't, you know, now's the time to put that on your checklist of things to do. And you need to make certain that it has a section in it that talks about weeding the collection. It really is helpful if your material selection delineates how you weed and how you dispose of materials. And then the important thing is to have this approved by your governing authorities. The crew book states it quite well, and I would steal this sentence right. I mean, I'm reading it because I thought it was so well done. It says, obtain library board approval of a written weeding and discarding policy as a defense against possible controversy and as a guide for day-to-day weeding. The crew manual is just that. If your materials policy doesn't, you know, have these things, put this crew manual right next to it. It works. Page 13 of the book, the crew book, gives a sample statement that you could simply append to your existing materials policy. They put it in there for just that purpose, so use it. There's also a very nice statement regarding donations as well.
It's on page 13.
I think it's really a good one. Be certain that you have educated your governing authorities so that they understand that what you're tossing out is in no way useful to anyone. I have found, you know, people are always bringing me back things that we've thrown away. I'm sure you've had that experience again. People seem to think as long as it's a book, it's so valuable. You need to educate everyone, including your volunteer helpers, that if you throw it away, nobody else needs it. So, and if you do have some materials that for some reason have survived and are in decent condition, and the Friends of the Library can't sell it, then you might want to locate an internet bookseller in your area who's willing to take on your discards. Lots of libraries now sell their discards or unneeded donations to vendors. Does anybody in you guys, do you know anybody who does that in your area?
We have done it in Dayton.
Okay, so you give it to a, you sell them yourself, or do you give them to an internet provider?
We have done the internet provider. We also have a local entity store that sells them for us.
That is just a marvelous way. If you can ship them out the door, it is so clean. Everyone's thrilled you're making. Has it worked for you?
The internet was moderate success, but the books were not very nice to begin with.
You know what? My thing about that is you got them out the door.
Yes.
I really didn't care. When I've done this years past, we couldn't care less if they made any money. We just, you know.
This would make a good future topic for First Tuesday.
Okay.
I'm interested in this, too. We're trying to get started on that, and we're having a lot of trouble getting contact with the person that said he wanted to do it.
Okay. So internet. People who will take your library discard that you
and donated books.
And donated as well.
They're just not good enough to put in, but they're still good.
Yes, that was, okay, that'll be a topic we'll tackle down the road. I was going to ask about that. Okay. So, any other comments on that?
This is Kathy. We don't have a material selection policy, and I was wondering if somebody could get me a copy of theirs or something so that I could start working on it.
Okay, well, that's something else. Susan is really being sweetie and doing that, and I bet we have some on file here, and we'll get that out.
Or get a template, perhaps.
A template, or we'll do something. It'll come on the listserv. What it'll do is we'll send it out on the listserv.
Good.
Anything else?
This is Jim. The text you're referring to, I've never received, so I need a copy of it.
Okay, the crew manual, you didn't get the crew manual?
I didn't receive anything either. This is
okay, well, they were mailed out. Okay, who, I have Jim, and who else did
Iris.
That's Charlie.
You're the last two that signed up, and I'm...
Yeah, we don't have one either. And
Gina Van Hess. Okay, we will double check as to what when they went out, because everyone who was signed up, they were mailed out last, August 28th.
Yeah, Jim and Ben got in there. Okay. The third person that said Sue?
Yes.
Okay. I think Janet has one, but we'll get one to you, too.
Janet hasn't gotten hers by yesterday.
Okay, well, okay, we nailed things out. You know, you're on the list. We'll do, I have extra copies, so for the very reason.
Okay.
We'll be glad to get your copies,
mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you. This is Carlotta, and we have done we've sent to a local store that gets rid of our things, and we've also had the book sales. We have considered doing the online thing, but have not done that yet. Today's Whitman County Library, and we certainly are sending our children's material online. Today is a good success for that. Mm-hmm. Are you putting it yourself?
Uh-huh.
Well, we have a fellow on staff that's done it, and we can get more information for you from Canada.
Wow.
People are, you know, looking for those books that they have as children, and they don't care what condition you're in, they just want it back.
Patty, do you do this from your website? I didn't hear that part.
I don't know for sure how it's handled, I just know we're doing it, and I can find out for you.
Oh, that would be good.
Okay, well, this is something that we will put together and organize, and maybe March will be our topic for March.
Good.
In the meantime, if any of you share sources, feel free to let me know, and then I'll put them on the list for the or messages back to you.
Okay. Well, then, any other comments on that? Okay. Well, basically, I just wanted to emphasize the fact that it's really good when you can do something like that, and the last thing you want to do is put them in the dumpster. I don't know about you, but I have had personal experience with customers crawling into the dumpsters and fishing them out. And then the worst thing that can happen to you, and it has happened, is they will either go to King 5 and report you as a wasteful government agency,
yes.
Or they will write the letter, you know, a nasty letter to the editor and say, so whatever you do, if you have to put them in the dumpster, box them up in an innocuous box, whatever you do, get rid of them discreetly, because otherwise it's bad and you just don't want to do that.
And, you know, this is Mary Ann Horsley. I'm an elementary school teacher for a librarian, actually. And I know for what I did, not at my present school, but at my previous school, is we had... when I went through and weeded, I left, you know, I stamped discarded so that it was noted that our library discarded the books. Then I let kids, I did it usually at the end of the year, I had saved all the discarded books, and I let them take them home.
Well, that's a good, that's a nice.
This is Linda from Grandview. We did that at the end of the summer reading program one time, all of our discarded children's books we let people take.
Right. And these, of course, yes, are books for children. And, you know, they may have gotten home and gotten to the dumpster, I don't know, but kids were so excited that they were able to take books. And then they would come up to me, and it was a school of, you know, several hundred kids, and they'd say, how many can I have? Mm-hmm. So I said, each day you can take three. And, you know, that's cool because there were kids who most likely didn't own very many books. Mm-hmm. And also were just thrilled with these old books. But to them, you know, mm-hmm. they were treasures. You know, they say one man's garbage is another man's treasure. So it was. I got rid of almost all the books that way that I had needed over the year, school year.
And here we have a local recycler that will take the adult books that you don't want anymore.
Well, that's
or recycle as paper.
That's wonderful because I know where I came from, we ran out of recyclers who would take them. So that's a wonderful resource.
So how do you determine on children's books what goes and what doesn't?
Who are you?
This is Carla. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I'll address that. I think you do need to do, there's something called the Children's Library Catalog, and that will list sort of things, standards that you know, currently every library should have. The other thing then I would do is condition. You know, I think that how ugly is the book? Children, you know, children deserve wonderful materials, and as much as your budget can, you should present them with clean books that aren't stained, that aren't ripped, that don't have dirty finger marks. So I'm going to talk about musty. Maybe it's later on where I'll formally go over it. But condition. I think that, you know, usually kids...
Italy, yes.
Yes, and the other thing is that, do you remember that a good children's book, probably a good title, if it isn't destroyed in 3 years, it's not a good title. You have a book that's probably 5 years old, and it's not destroyed. It's a shelf sitter. It's no good. You know, a good children's book.
Linda from Grandview, the new thing has come up lately. The homeschoolers are wanting the old classics that we've already discarded.
Yes, yes. And
they're insisting that they must have them.
That's what interlibrary loan is for. I mean, well, the other thing, this is a collection call. This is some call because those things are coming back into print. And depending upon your material selection guideline and how you feel about that, you know, some of them were really, you know, Dick and Jane was pretty, there were some really objectionable things about it. So, by today's standards. So, you might, you know, before you run out and satisfy customer requirement, you ought to think about it.
Yeah.
And what I would
do that, but you know what, I'll bet you they can't even find them, period.
They're out there.
They're not politically correct by any means.
No, they are not, but they are out there. If you went to Amazon or you went to some of the bigger book sites, you could find Dick and Jane. I mean, you could, but I wouldn't advise it.
Collectible.
Yeah, they're collectible.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're out there. But like I say, I would read children's materials for, you know, use your children's fiction catalog or children's catalog. Get that resource. If you don't have it, that's well worth the $50 that...
If you don't have one tomorrow?
We probably could interlibrary loan it, but that's one, seriously, the public library catalog and the children's catalog and the fiction catalog are three things that I think are worth the investment. If you don't own those personally, you should, because those are things that you should write notes in as you read. You should say, oh, this is too esoteric, or yes, or whatever. You know,
it's the names again, children.
All of this will send out on the listserv.
Very good. I have a question relating to those. This is Linda from Grandview. What about how long do you keep those? That's another thing about weeding. How long do you keep those particular reference sources?
Do remember that publishers want to make money. And so they update those every year, and then they come out
with... I've got a big selection of them.
Yes, and then they come out with a new hardback every 5 years. So if I
were... I have them back to the 70s.
I would toss any... The newest one supersedes all the previous.
Okay.
So toss the old, just keep the latest.
All right.
Okay? All right. I'm gonna go on, but are there any other questions about... Children's, did I answer that question well enough about children's reading?
Yes, you did. Thank you very much.
Okay. So now the other thing you need to do before you begin to read is you need to review your library strategic plan. How many of you have a strategic plan?
Mrs. Carlotta,
we do. Okay. Anybody else?
Only in technology.
Okay. Do you have a mission statement?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, if your library doesn't have a strategic plan, this is when you need to go back to your mission statement. But basically, the question I want you to ask yourself is, why does your public pay to keep your doors open? What do they expect? What does your community expect of you when they walk through the doors? So what do you, why are you buying? What do you buy? Are you a public, do you see yourself as a public popular reading center for adults and possibly as a resource center for school kids? Or is one of your purposes as an English as a second language site? You know, when you figure out why or how you're in, what your purpose is in the community, that's going to dictate how you read. For example, if you consider yourself as a popular reading center for adults, then you are not going to have 6 shelves of Greek literature or that beautiful set of bound literature that somebody gave you. All the complete collected works of Ovid is not going to be in your library. That type of thing. So you need to think about your library's role. What purpose do you serve in the community, and keep that in the forefront of your mind as you read. Now, I need you to be honest with yourself. Each inch you guys all have, in fact, every library in the world has limited shelf space. And every inch of your library space is so valuable that I am a firm believer that every book or every DVD or audiobook, pounding on the table, I'm earnest here. It has to earn its place. I mean, if it doesn't circulate, it is not worth it. Can you justify the shelf space for a special collection if each book in that special collection doesn't circulate at least once a year? Every ancient edition is stealing space from some new material that the customers will probably like better. Remember, you can always interlibrary loan materials from other libraries to fill those once in every 5-year requests. Now, does anybody have any comments on that?
I guess we're talking small libraries here, right? Because somebody's got to keep those in their collection for a standard library loan.
Well, I think that you find that Tacoma, I just worked at Tacoma Public very recently, and trust me, they have everything. They've got nothing.
Tacoma,
trust me, if you need to find it, go to look at Tacoma. Here's a copy of the reference. Tacoma, Seattle Public, King County, that's their job. You know, Carolyn Hart publishes a new mystery in 2 series. Every year, I mean twice a year, you can't possibly have everything, well maybe you can, but you know, after a while it's like, your customers have read that, I'm jumping ahead in my topic here, but your customers have read those things, and it probably, you should probably keep just the last 5 years, because, you know, if you find a new reader, it's quite easy, it's not easy to interlibrary loan, but you can, for that occasional new reader, go back and pick them up either through paperbacks or other ways. You know, it's just your new stuff, people want new material so badly that to keep complete runs of things, you have to, you know, you know your customers and you have to do it, but I think long and hard about it. So, because it's a battle. I mean, I moved in Puyallup into a brand new building. We went from 20,000 to 40,000 square feet and we filled it in 2 years. And by the time I left, we were, for every book that came in, a book had to go out. So it really doesn't matter how big you are, that's just the way it goes. You, for every book in, book has to come out. Is that a policy you maintain? No? I think about it. Okay, no comments, I'm going on. Now we come to the crew method, and I apologize to those of you who haven't received your book. But the crew method is an acronym that stands for Continuous Review, Evaluation, and Reading. And I want to emphasize the continuous review. In libraries with limited budgets and space, and that actually is every library, no matter how big it is, but for smaller libraries especially, you have to evaluate your collection every year. And this systematic annual process enables you to stay on top of your collection. It enables you to know, to have hard data right away, so that when something comes up, you know you can deal with it. For example, I was always annoyed that whenever I went to the GED section, my GED books were in circulation, and it wasn't until I read it in section that I realized, no, they weren't in circulation, they were lost and stolen. But you need, if you don't look at it, if you don't look at your shelf list and the process of evaluation, you're not going to know that. And then so when a new English teacher moves into your community and she gaps assigns every person in every one of her classes, and that's probably 50 kids, and you're gnashing your teeth, and they all show up at your library, and they have an assignment to read only poems published after 1970. If you've weeded your 800s, you realize that most of the things in your collection were published in 1970, and quote unquote, they're still good. Well, they are, but they don't contain the poems those kids are going to be asked to read. You know, to read. So you have to scramble to find internet sites where the poems can be found, and in the meantime, you quick, you know, buy a couple books if you can afford it that have those newer poems in them. But weeding enables you to know and find those gaps in the collection. So on pages 13 through 17, those of you who have the books, carefully laid out the 10-step method. It's very logical, it's very good, and I highly recommend it. And I'm going to proceed on the assumption you've already read it, because I personally think there's nothing more annoying than somebody who reads from the book that I've been given to read. So, I do want to call your attention to the form on the bottom of page 14. Can you flip there?
If you have it.
If you have it? Okay. This is an extremely useful form for those of you who don't have it. And what it does is this is the form you should stick in every book that you have your pages pull off the shelf. I'll talk about how you do this later, but every book that comes to you for reading should have this little decision point in it, because it gives you, it kind of organizes what you should do with the book, and I found it very helpful. But one thing I do think you ought to change when you do this for yourself is it says binding. I think that unless your library contains something that is unique to your library, in other words, a work of local history or family genealogy, I would not bind anything. Nowadays, I think binding is expensive and information changes just too fast to justify the investment that binding requires. Is anybody binding anything but newspapers? Are you still doing that? No? Okay, well, that's a good thing, because I think that's a practice that we used to do, and I think it's very popular. I think it's really, when I was in Chihuahua, I bound my local things, and I bound things that I could cut apart. If it had a spiral or comb binding, and I could preserve the front cover and the back cover, I would consider it. But it was expensive to do. So, and if you can't, it was like $10 on top of the book, and it was only reasonable because I was sending it in with a shipment of newspapers to be bound. And so, and I got a better rate if I could send 50 books along with it. So it's pretty expensive, and I would seriously consider before you did that. I also want to talk about buckram bindings. How many of you have buckram bindings in your collection? I'm going to just flag this right now. Personal pet peeve, I hate buckram bindings.
What is a buckram binding?
A buckram binding is that bound to stay bound binding. I personally find it very ugly, and so I'm revealing my prejudices. And what I chiefly hate against it is marketing. I think that people don't find them attractive. My experience with that is if I had it in buckram binding, no matter how good the book was, it was a shelf sitter because people didn't like it. Lots of times that stuff does last forever. I found, to my horror, when I worked in Tacoma Public, that they had bound an Anderson title from 1920, and the binding was great. Now, the minute you open the book, it was terrible. But, the problem is people do judge a book by its cover. So buckram, I think, is an instant turn-off.
Is that like a brand buckram?
It's a kind of cover.
Yeah, it's a really heavy duty, and they used to use it a lot because literally it makes your book last forever.
It's sort of like canvas, but it just is.
It's like a solid cover?
Yes. Sorry, you heard my prejudice. Yes. My prejudice. What I frequently find is that people tend to put classics in that.
Yes.
And I really feel that that's a disservice to the classics. Classics should get the best treatment we can give them. And I find that whenever I was working with kids, it was a lot easier to sell Robert Louis Stevenson in a paperback edition of his Kidnapped. I could maybe get a kid to take Kidnapped in a paperback edition, but if it came, usually the other thing I have against buckram bindings is they tend to make the book look so doggone fat and hard to read. I mean, it increases the book by probably, here you can tell my prejudice. But you should get your classics in paperback editions. They usually are so much more attractive. They have something that entices the reader into them. And so,
is there any way to find out if the particular classics have decent paper inside? Because my prejudice is against the kind of paperback inside, where in 3 years it looks like it's 100 years old.
Right, the paper is terrible.
I hate to say it, but I think that's the market. There isn't really too many good.
I think paper, my feelings, Mary Ann, from Sinsel, I think that paperbacks are truly, that's how it's being marketed. I mean, they're not cheap necessarily, but basically, I read it and give it to someone else. You know,
the ideas, but then you have to keep buying the same ones over and over and over again.
I think that's cost of doing business. You know, I regret to say that, but I think it is the cost of doing business. And the only thing I could say about paperbacks, you could buy the Everyman editions. The trouble with those is they're so non-appealing. We bought them all. We bought Modern Library and the
Dover Thrift editions.
Yes. Well, the Dover Thrift are more than a dollar now. But we bought those, and I noticed that the gold stuff wore off right away. But anyway, that's the discussion. But I think that you do need to do just buy the classics in your community that move. Don't do them that don't move.
Carolyn, yes. Having played around a bit with internet auctions and buying, what about for the classics they do want out on the internet auction sites like half.com and amazon.com? You can, you know, if it's a common classic and people don't care about what edition it is and the, those particulars, you can pick those up for literally a couple of bucks because there's so many people trying to sell them out there. What about that idea as a way of replacing, and you get a good hardback that way? And, you know, they're rated as being like new, yeah. Like new, very good. And usually people are pretty honest.
Yeah. The one thing I would say about that is whenever possible, look at the cover. Because, you know, I think the thing about this is we all know we quote.
Yeah, I ordered this. It came in when I had requested Wacos.
Yeah.
So
I think the covers are so important to sell books. You know, classics are ones that need to be sold. And so by that I mean, in some ways, especially considering your space, I would think about, say, like you have decided you have to have 50 to 100 classic titles in your library. Let's just use that as a point for discussion. Then I would only buy the ones that, of those 100 titles, that you feel you can personally recommend or that you know that the high school teacher requires. Because otherwise, you know, your space is so precious in your libraries to move materials through that, you know, I've been in some that had, you know, 7-8 shelves of classics. Well, you know, do you need that for your DVD collection? What about your audiobook collection? Space is so important in your libraries, in your situations, that I think to have library, you know, you need some. I'm not saying you don't need them, but I would think long and hard about which ones you get. And the other thing is classics can be John Updike. Can be, you know, quite a few more new people. Maya Angelou, consider buying new classics as opposed to, you know, they don't always have to be writers that published, you know, Dickens, on beyond Dickens. So think contemporary classics as well as, you know, you should probably have readers for those new people. You probably have readers, for good readers, who will read the really good authors and consider those as classics as well.
We mine through our eyes.
Yes.
And so that's why the pictures and the display. When I was doing my doctoral work, I had a fellow student who did a whole dissertation on showing that it really didn't matter what you were displaying, but if it was colorful and prominent, people would check it out.
Yes.
I just want to point out that on the internet auctions, they often do post a picture,
yes,
a photograph of the book, so you can get some idea about how it's going to look on your shelves.
There's also the factor of what kind of a stupid title it has, because
right, you are.
So if it has a title that people don't identify with, like there was a novel not long ago called Animal Husbandry. I can't sell that one. It was a good book.
I know. Those are tough.
Well, I think there's several jokes, Linda, that could come out of that, but we'd probably better go on.
Yes, I better get back to my talk if I'm going to get you off this phone, for those of you who opened at 10. So I'd like to now comment on the acronym MUSTSEE that's found on page 31 for those of you lucky enough to have the book. And this is really good for kind of a standard of reading of what you pull. The acronym stands for misleading, ugly, superseded, trivial, irrelevant, and elsewhere, meaning you can interlibrary zone it. So my guess is if I put you down in your neighbor's library and I told you to read it, you wouldn't have any trouble following those guidelines.
I mean, that's what we need to do, go to each other's library.
Yes. And I think the thing is that you can go, oh, you can be dispassionate. You know, when you go come across a science book that dates from the 80s, you go, oh, yes, science has marched on. But when you're in your own library, it's different. You know your replacement budget isn't that big. And you'd rather buy new stuff than replace standards. And then, you know, after all, you kind of whisper to yourself, isn't it better that I have something rather than nothing? And here I'm going to refer you to the book where it says in the biggest print in the entire book, it says, less is more. The look, and this goes right to what Rand was talking about in terms of display, and this is so important. The looks you need to have in your libraries is to have enough space at the end of each shelf to display one book facing out. Now, I'm going to say that again because I hope there are mental shrieks of anguish going up all over the place. Can I hear them? Let me say, the standard you want to achieve is to have enough space at the end of each shelf to have one book with the cover facing out. Do I have any comments on this?
Working on it.
Okay, I know this is hard because you want to give your customers the most stuff. And I just talked about saving every title of my beloved Carolyn Hart. And I want the Tamara Myers mystery series, and she has 25. And so how can I not have a crowded mystery section? How can I not have every Danielle Steele and Nora Roberts because she's so popular? So I know the anguish, the personal anguish this causes, but you've got to do it. Because, again, we need to look attractive. Remember what Rand's doctoral friends found out. It really, it's true. I mean, we can verify this. So a crowded shelf is not an attractive shelf. It's hard to find things. And then I remember coming across a little old lady who was struggling to pull a book out because she couldn't get it out of the shelf. And I was so embarrassed that my shelf was so tight that she couldn't pull the book off. So, you know, there's another reason for doing it. So the other thing is, especially in nonfiction, the internet is your friend. Nowadays, you know, you used to think I have to have something in every Dewey category. And nowadays, you can find something on every Dewey catalog. Besides, how many of you have a ProQuest subscription?
Yes.
Does everybody have ProQuest?
Yes. Kathy,
well, okay, well, you know,
you just may not have contacted it.
Okay, all right,
sorry. Okay, well, Kathy, I'll talk to you about that. Because, and I will come out and help you with that if I have to. But I don't mean that way, Kathy. I mean, I'll be.
I know.
I guess I'm so sold on ProQuest. I really like ProQuest. What it takes to get you up and comfortable with ProQuest, I'm on it, is what I'm trying to say. ProQuest is a marvelous thing that you can find something about just about every current topic. You know, the magazines that are encompassed in that, they're updated daily. They're updated all the time. And so, you know, you don't have to have a book on the shelf. And in fact, it's almost better that you don't. Do you remember how long it takes to get information published? And so the books you want to be selecting are books that are kind of, what should I say, they don't have to be up to the date. They should be kind of like popular reading or general information or authoritative, but we don't have to have the authoritative stuff on our shelf. We've got databases for that. That's where we're moving, is we're moving into databases that be updated and authoritative. If you have online resources, your customers will think you are more authoritative than if you go to a book to find it. Has anybody had that experience? Yes, where you go to...
Especially true for younger people.
Yes, I found that out where I had first when the internet workstation came out, I got a grant. I took a young man, I was trying to get him to use my rule book and hardback, and he wouldn't use it because he knew I had it online. He thought that was more authoritative, and I'm sure you're finding that. So don't think you have to have a book on it nowadays. You have materials that are updated daily, and use those databases. That's where people are placing the relevance. That's where they're going with it. So that's what you need to do.
Are you going to cover reference work today?
Yes.
Yeah. This is Carlotta, and we have the ProQuest, but in my library, for some reason, it's difficult to access.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, Carlotta, I'm so glad you're telling us this, because we will come out. One of the things that Susan and I have been talking about is offering training on how to use these things. Would that be of interest to you?
Sure.
If we offered like a monthly, like a, I find that I hate a one-time training session. I need repetitive training, and so we're thinking about, if you're interested in it, please email us. And we're thinking about developing a training that would go for a month, where we work on a database that you have already, like ProQuest, and doing it.
So that would probably work really well for all of the rural libraries district. We could come together maybe and do that.
Okay, well, we'll think about that. Might be something that we can accomplish. I shouldn't promise more than I can deliver, but
okay.
I'll investigate. Rand, my boss, is probably going, what did she say that for? But anyway, he just threw up his hands. He knew he can't do anything about it. No.
And I don't
do anything with her or without
her.
So,
I will email.
Okay, well, let me quickly, I'm going to...
I have a comment. This is Mary Ann from Central. And regarding your databases and all that stuff, I know, and I'm part of a, you know, the staff of a school district, and the librarians in our school district, especially I'm talking for elementary, when we have children that are doing a report on Civil War or an animal or something to that effect that's nonfiction, our rule is always go to a book first and then go to a database on the online, because, and this is important because I think this is really critical for little kids, but K through 5, maybe not so much middle school and high school, because they have more background knowledge than the younger kids. But we always have them first use books because they don't have a lot of background knowledge, and they usually will end up doing both. But if they have a book to start with that they can understand, they then get background knowledge and have keywords that they can look up. A lot of times at that age level, they may not know words like habitat or, you know, so they are not sure what to put into ProQuest. So having a book on nonfiction things for younger kids is really critical.
My previous remarks were really addressed. Thank you for adult materials, and thank you for saying that. And ProQuest really is a database that is aimed at high school kids and up.
I've actually used it with elementary.
And we have a younger one as well that we probably should cover that's aimed at the elementary school kids. But I hope you don't mind. I'm running over on this, but
I just wanted that comment today.
Yes, I appreciate that. I appreciate that, and I think those are good things for us to be reminded of. We need to know what the schools are doing. That's so important for us to work together.
And also to have some of those nonfiction in not adult type of things, because the kids, you know, what you and I may read on, let's say, the Earth, is not the same level that at kindergarten to fifth grade, and I mean that's a huge range, but you know, those kids do need it, you know, and the parents are going to try to help them. So it's, you know, so you will, even in rural area schools or non-school, run across that, because the school may not have that many funds to support a whole school on all the nonfiction. So, because they need to have a diverse collection also.
Okay. Good comments. Thank you for them. Are we okay with me moving on?
Sure.
Okay. Now you're motivated. I'm kind of reviewing here. You have all your policies in place. Hopefully you've accepted that less is more. I'm going to refer to, you've located the formulas that tell you what you should read. Look to page 33, if those of you have the book. For those of you who don't, what this does is what I think is some of the most valuable stuff in the book. What it does is it goes down for each Dewey area. It says, you know, you should, it gives you a year, a copyright date that you want to look for,
And then it gives you the ability to say how many times it needs to be circulated. That's something that each library needs to decide for themselves. And then it says must be, meaning is it irrelevant, is it ugly, is it, you know, all of that. You know, you need, these are the three things you need to consider to weed it. And so that chart is also available on a double-sided chart that if I were in your shoes, I would copy it off and laminate it and stick it to my reading book truck so that you could refer to it, to let you do it. So, okay, but how do you do reading when it's you alone? How do you manage to get this done? I use volunteers. I think that when you're a one-person show, you've got to figure out some way to disperse your workload, and a good volunteer is invaluable. You need to figure out somebody who you can trust to come in weekly and is detail-oriented. You need to set up guidelines for them. You read a section with them to train them. You know, have a list of printed guidelines for them. You pull any book that is this. I want you to look at each book and then train them to know whether or not the book needs repair. You know, establish the standards with them. You might want to print a list of everything that hasn't circulated in 5 years or 2 years, and then have them go through the shelves and pull off all of those books. And then I think you need to build it into your weekly schedule. It needs to be a task. I know Friday afternoons my brain was usually dead, but I could always weed. So, you know, have a time in your week when you do this. And it has to happen every week, because otherwise it'll get away from you. And you may, maybe you only devote 15 minutes to it, but build it into your schedule. It has to be there. This is so important to keeping our libraries up to date and relevant. And we're in kind of a, I almost feel like we're in a battle now, because people are saying, well, why do we need a library? The internet is there. And we need a library because the internet does not provide everything. But we need to compete with others. So it's really important that we keep our libraries looking absolutely wonderful and having the material that we need for them. Okay, I can talk more about that, but I'd like to also talk about what I was asked to talk about, was how do you weed the reference collection? I think you weed the reference collection by being really honest with yourself and true to say, what do you really use? Reference collections are shrinking because reference materials are increasingly only going to be published online. Your book collections, I'm going to guess that in 10 years you won't be able to buy reference books. So your books, your reference books, what you have to do is think to yourself, how many times do I really walk to the shelf and use that reference book? Is the information, what's the copyright? In the crew manual, it gives you some ideas for you know, how many years, the criteria for reading reference. But I really think what you need to read reference on is, do I use this? And are my patrons using it? I think use is a huge driver of success. If I use it on, in other words, if I know I had one particular set that was an encyclopedia set on medieval life, and it was wonderful. I had a group of kids that I knew came in. There was a school assignment. Every year they came in and needed information on medieval life. So I kept that set because it was useful. I knew from 2 months in the spring that was going to get used. Then there was another set that a new librarian bought on archaeology. Nobody used that set. So we put it in circulation. We moved it into the circulating side of the library. We figured, okay, it'll get used in our archaeology set. Evaluate your reference collection for use. How are you using it? And if you find like me, I couldn't believe it, that I was turning to my computer. It was so easy when I was on the desk and checking people out and answering questions to just flip to that internet, and I was doing reference all there. It's moving to the internet. You know, like I say, be honest with yourself. Do you really use those books? If you don't use those books, then move them to some place where they'll be used in a circulating collection, or move them on.
Carolyn, another thought I have, just quickly, is that reference is becoming more collaborative, too, among libraries. And, with our work with the virtual reference service, libraries are collaborating now on questions they can't answer locally can be put out to other Washington libraries or can be put out nationally, depending on how you're doing that kind of reference. And that might be something that we could talk about sometime later on. But it just points out, I think, that you don't have to have everything in your library. If there are things that are infrequently used and those questions come along, there's ways of collaborating with other libraries to get answers.
Would you be interested, you might be, how many of you are aware of the Question Point project in the library, Virtual Reference Library Service? No? How many?
No.
I didn't grant you.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe would that be of interest to you later on, another topic we could talk about?
Yes. Okay. It sounds too expensive. The time I learned about it at a conference, I didn't think we could afford it.
And Linda, there are ways of doing reference by email only that actually don't cost you anything.
Oh, okay. That would be good.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's what we would be discussing. We wouldn't be discussing the excessive. It would be the less expensive or...
Right.
Okay. So with that, we'll again, all of these things, we're going to put out some more topics on the listserv. Now it is 10 o'clock, and I apologize if anybody that is has to go away. I was going to talk about reading 800s or things that never change.
Yes.
Yes.
I wanted the 900s, but actually the biographies. Yeah, well, biographies in the historical.
Again, I think there are two things that we've already touched upon. Usage, you don't have to keep everything. I think it should be, do you use it? I mean, again, our world has changed so much. There is so much of the information available on topics that we never, you know, it used to be, I had to have something about, you know, I felt I needed to cover everything. And now I think what I would have a hardback book on is I would have a hardback book on something I know your schools need, school assignments. You should have something that for people that come in and use school assignments. I think you should, again, usage I think should drive this. You know, what do your customers use? What areas are popular? In my library, I noticed that I had a tremendous readership for anything from World War II. So I had a huge World War II section. And you know, I had a very small section on Asian history. And I had one or two books maybe, but nobody was interested in Asian history. And so I noticed when I came, we had like several shelves, but they weren't being used. So it's kind of like, okay, I have maybe one or two books on it, and I have a general. But I just, whereas every time I got a new World War II book, it moved off the shelf. So I think you really need to evaluate your collections for who uses them and what are they interested in. You are so close to your customers. You know what they want to read. You know, you probably have personal relationships with these folks. So I would think you want, because we do have so many ways to different ways to find information nowadays, it isn't as important as it used to be to have something about everything. Does that help? Or
yeah.
Do you need
kind of a... That's a very good point. I mean, I think about, you know, this is Mary Ann from Stanislaw Elementary, and I know I'm at elementary school, but when I've done, like, analysis through one of our vendors, they download our database, and then they analyze where we have areas that are empty and so forth, and it's like, some of those areas I look at and I think, well, there's a reason why. You know, I mean, and I sometimes feel bad. Oh, I should have those, but I'm not sure if I had more that they would move because the things I've had have never moved.
No,
I mean, I have a very, very small budget. And, you know, it's mainly from the PTA because they don't allocate funds for books in school these days. So, you know, for the library books. And so, you know, I prefer to use, and I always have felt bad, maybe I should buy that, but then I buy other things that I know are going to move, you know, and especially in elementary school, it's like new type of novel, you know, not that I have a huge, you know, nonfiction section, but, you know, some of the areas are less developed. maybe that there's a reason, so that's good that you say that, because I always feel bad. Maybe I should have more on that. But then, hey, you know, it's hard not to buy, for instance, in my library, books on animals. I mean, little kids just love them, you know, and never have enough animal books. And I have a particular collection, but man, they are always gone.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's okay. You know,
yeah,
it's sort of like heavy in that area and light in other areas, but that's where my population uses, you know. So it's good to hear that, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Any other questions about that, the areas that I can explore? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, great.
I was thinking, I have already commented on, I guess I will say it again, give you kind of a rule of thumb, and then I will let you go, unless you have further questions. And that is, again, how long should you keep popular authors? I mean, Nora Roberts, oh my goodness, that woman publishes probably 6 titles a year, some of which are retrospective. But I really feel, again, most current, figure out for yourself how much space you have, and then back issues, borrow from other libraries. You know, that's why we have OCLC. That's why we are cooperative. Librarians have always been cooperative. We can't have it all. We just can't. And so I wouldn't attempt to meet your customers' needs for what they need, and then don't worry about other things. Okay, and then keep your collections bright, attractive, and wonderful, and you know your patrons will keep coming back to you.